I thought I would talk about prayer. And the reason I wanted to talk about prayer is because I find it myself a very helpful spiritual technique. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about prayer, so I thought it'd be good to kill two birds with one stone and talk about prayer. Now, if we define prayer as just basic communicating with God, then what do I mean by God? And what are we praying to, and who are we in the first place? Now, since we're Vedantins, our first priority is defining ourselves in terms of the Atman. That is who we really are. That is our real, true nature. So although we are kind of using this body-mind complex, we use it as the way we would inhabit a trailer, it's not our real identity. Our real identity is we are pure, and we are perfect, and we are mortal, and that is who we are. And we always have to keep reminding ourselves that that is our first and last nature. That is who we are. We are pure, we're divine, we're free, and somehow we get deluded into thinking that we're kind of taken in by the body and the mind, and we're deluded that we're going to die. We are deluded into thinking that we're affected by time and space and by causality. And we get deluded to think we're being affected by the law of karma. And we get deluded into thinking that we're affected by fat. And one of my favorites. We're deluded by hair color. We're deluded by divorce, by grief, by loss, by gain, by the stock market. We think we're limited by that. And we're taken in and again and again. And we have to keep reminding ourselves as Vedantins that's not who we are. We're completely unaffected by that. That we use this body and mind, but it's just like we don't want to be trailer trash. This is something we use and then it's over with. Our identity is that Atman. That is who we are. But we also have to deal with the reality of our delusion. It's like, okay, I'm being taken in by that bad commercial. So often people turn to prayer when they get knocked around by life. You know, when things, did you know that this today is declared a day of prayer? I didn't know that. I was listening to the radio on the way down. Today is a day of prayer in the four Gulf states affected by the oil spill, and because they're now expecting a hurricane or a tropical storm, they've declared a day of prayer. In other words, oh my God, we can't do anything else, we better pray. Great. So, I mean, it's not that it's not a bad idea, but it's like, okay, we tried everything else apart from the nuclear bomb, so now we're going to turn to prayer. And this is how basically I think the majority of humankind deals with prayer. It's like, oh God, this is happening, I better pray. Because most people don't really think about having a relationship with God. They don't really think about if there is a divine reality. They don't even stop to think about, is there anything more than any of this? Is there anything more than this? So there's that wonderful story about a priest who said to a little boy, are you saying your prayers every night? And he said, well, no, not every night, because sometimes I don't want anything. Well, it's like, which shows you where prayer usually is. It's like it's prayers asking for favors. Oh God, I'm going to have to pray for that. But prayer isn't asking. Well, it is a prayer. It is a prayer, but it's a very low form of prayer. So, if often our forms of prayer or the human tendency is to make prayer, God give me this, or God please get me out of that. Or it's the deal making. God, if you do this, I'll do that. If you give me this job, I'll go to mass for the next year. Or if you do this, I promise I'll never. I swear to God, I'll never do it again. I promise. It's like, cross my heart. And that's exactly the sort of thing we don't want to do. It is a form of prayer, but it's a very low form of prayer. Swami Vivekananda said, when a person prays to God, give me this and give me that, it's not love. How can it be? I offer you a prayer, and you give me something in return. That's what it is, mere shopkeeping. So we don't want to be shopkeepers. We really want to have an authentic spiritual life. So then, how do we go forward? It was interesting, when I decided I wanted to talk about prayer, I started looking up what Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother had to say about prayer. And then I looked at Edith Tipple's books, what the disciples said about it. So I looked under prayer, and all the disciples have very long amounts about what they say about prayer, with a notable absence of Swami Vivekananda. And I went, that's interesting. Maybe that's not why they don't talk a lot about prayer in Vedanta societies. And I thought, well, why is there this lack? And then I thought, who's the one who transcribed all of Swami Vivekananda's talks? J.J. Goodwin. Most of his talks were recorded by J.J. Goodwin because they were given mostly in America and England. Well, in that time, that's where you found a lot of the shopkeeping religion. There was a lot of this association with God, with getting down on your knees and asking for God to give you $1 million. So that's why you see its absence in the complete works, except for very negative things about this thing with the shopkeeping religion that's fairly typical of Swamiji. But when you look at Swamiji's own life, you'll see how full of prayer it was. For example, when that wonderful part of his life when he was a student, and he was talking to an American reporter, and he said, I was so yearning. I wanted to know the answers to life so much. He said, for 3 days, I prayed day and night for 3 days, neither eating nor sleeping. For 3 days, saying, what is the answer? What is the answer? Running like a madman, going to and fro, saying, sir, have you seen God? Sir, have you seen God? Until at the end of those 3 days, who does he run into but Sri Ramakrishna, who says, yes, I have seen God only more intensely than I see you. At a period of 3 days of intense prayer. Again, we can see when Swamiji was at his wit's end, when his father died and his family was left in poverty, what happened? He goes to Sri Ramakrishna. He says, I don't know what to do. You have to go pray to the mother. And Sri Ramakrishna said, nothing doing. You go pray to the mother. And so he goes to the Kali temple. He prays to Mother Kali. He comes back 3 times. And he says, Sri Ramakrishna said, were you successful? And Swamiji kept saying, no. So all he could do when he saw the shining luminous image of the mother was to pray for knowledge and devotion. Oh, mother, give me knowledge and devotion. That's prayer. Again, the most personal things that Swami Vivekananda ever wrote were not his lectures, not even his poetry, though sometimes his letters have some very good things, but actually if you take a good look at the songs we sing every evening in the Ramakrishna order, Kandana Bhava Pandana and Om Ring Ritong, these songs that are written to Sri Ramakrishna, breaker of this world's chain, we adore thee. All these songs are such the most personal thing he ever wrote. Come to the heart's black cave and illumine, thou light, the light. Again, Om Ring Ritong. In my weakness, I have failed to worship your blessed lotus feet earnestly and earnestly. So I take refuge in you. I take refuge in you. I have no other refuge but you. Therefore, I claim sanctuary, O Lord of the lonely. Again and again. In both of those songs, Sri Ramakrishnaya Namo Nama. Again, these songs of praise and prayer. So Swamiji was all about man-making and having no fear. There's no fear. There's no cravenness. No begging for anything except, Lord, come to my heart. Lord, illumine our hearts. That's the most earnest and heartfelt prayer we can have. Lord, come and illumine our hearts. So we often tend not to think of prayer as part of the Hindu tradition because we really associate it with those dualistic traditions. And I think it's important to see where we stand as Vedantins as far as prayer. Now, it's significant that unlike the Abrahamic traditions, okay, and by the Abrahamic traditions, I'm talking about the Western background, which is Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. We don't have that sense of God as being what they call holy other. There's a whole theology in the Protestant tradition, and it followed in many places, by God is entirely different than us. We're down here, God's up there. There's no way that we can ever completely connect because God is holy other. He's completely different. So our form of prayer is very different. So it's important for us to remember that. We have to remember that when we are praying, we know we are that ultimate divine reality. We know we are Satchitananda. We know that we are purity, that we have perfection already within ourselves. So we're not trying to be something different than what we already are. We're not cravenly asking God to have mercy on our souls. We are asking for our birthright as human beings. Our birthright as human beings is that we are pure and perfect. We have that divine reality within us. So we're not asking for anything that doesn't belong to us by right. What we have is that wonderful, that Brahman is already within our hearts. So we're not coming from that sort of dualistic place, oh God, do this. It's like revealing that total reality which is already within our hearts. Now for us, again, unlike the Abrahamic traditions, we're not asking for heaven because heaven for us is kind of a really bad consolation prize. We don't want heaven. It's like, oh, damn, I blew it off again. Stuck in heaven. Because we just know that we're going to have to come back down here again and hold the whole damn thing all over again. As Swami Prabhavananda inimitably said, it's the same old stuff. So, it's like you go to heaven, you got to come back down and deal with it all over again. So we don't want heaven. We want what is ours by right, which is our own divine nature. That is that pure, perfect reality that we already know is there. So this is where we're coming from. Now, the problem with that is, okay, we're pure. We're perfect. We already know that we are whole and complete in ourselves. That's where a lot of us get tripped up because we think, oh, if I only had that, then I'll be complete. It's like every romantic comedy of every movie made in the last 50 years has to do about, oh, I found him or her, and now I'm complete. Oh, the wedding ring goes on, and they live happily ever after. Well, no one ever makes anybody complete. No one ever makes anybody happy. Nothing can make us nothing. Not all the gold, not all the uranium in China, not all the internet connections that the universe can hand us. Nothing makes us happy apart from our own real nature. So we often get sucked into this thing about, ooh, I can do that, then I'll be happy. But happiness is ours. We are already pure and perfect. We are already free. Nothing is going to make us free. We're already free. Now, the only part of this thing is like, that part in the commercial on the radio when they say, they give you the whole song and dance. This sounds great. Where the terms only apply. The terms like, this is our divine nature. But somehow we've gotten deluded into forgetting it. So how do we get from the stage of knowing that our real nature is Satchidananda, that we are divine, that we are the nature of absolute consciousness, absolute bliss, absolute perfect being, and then our reality of being, getting stuck at a four-way stop and getting irritated about it? Well, it's our minds. It's this thing. We have to deal with purifying our minds. Purifying our hearts. This is the beast that we have to deal with, and this is where prayer comes in. This brings us to the question, as Vedantins, okay, if we're pure and perfect, then what are we praying to? Why bother to pray in the first place? I remember we were just talking about Swami Lokeshwaranada. There was an article. Swami Lokeshwaranada was the head of the Institute of Culture in India for many years. And there's this journal called The Bulletin, and he wrote this editorial for Bulletin on Prayer probably 20 years ago. So I read it, and in this article he said, when we pray, we're just praying to our higher selves. I got so irritated with that, I shot him off an aerogram and said, you're wrong. What do you mean you're praying? I said, maybe you're praying to your Atman, but I'm not praying to any Atman. I'm praying to Ramakrishna, Holy Mother. So he sent me back an aerogram and said, no, you're praying to your higher self. So I was extremely irritated with that. Well, what the hell does he know? You're wrong. And then, because I didn't get it. I really didn't get it. It took me much longer to actually sort of process this and sort of get it. Well, in reality, we're actually both right. Because he was right to the extent there is nothing but the Atman anyway. There's that wonderful thing that Shankara says, the Atman is one with Brahman. I remember I was walking from high school I was 15 years old, and I was walking back from Santa Barbara High School to the public library. because I had to wait for my dad to get off work. I had just discovered Vedanta. I'd just gone up to the temple, and so I was walking back, and so I was sitting around in the library waiting for my dad to get off work, and they had this book of Shankara there. So I pulled out the book, and I said, I remember someone said something about Shankara, so I opened it up randomly, and it said, the Atman is one with Brahman. And I went, oh, my God. It was like all of a sudden I was struck by a thunderbolt. I thought, this is just unbelievable. The Atman is one with Brahman. And I was like looking around at all the people in the library. It's like, I was so excited. You know, the Atman's one with Brahman. It's like, they could care less. It's like, but it was like this moment in my life. It was this, I can tell you exactly what the library looked like. It was this moment of my life. But it's like, so that is our ground reality. The Atman is one with Brahman. And as we keep hearing, as Swami Shraddhananda used to keep saying to us, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, this wonderful line from the Chandogya Upanishad, all this is indeed Brahman. Everything that we encounter is Brahman. Now, whether we use the word Brahman or Atman doesn't matter. It's just semantics. But everything that we encounter, everything we see, everything we know, this from the mind out, everything that we encounter is Brahman. So of course the Ishta is Brahman. So what I say that I'm meditating upon, when we call our Ishta, that is our chosen ideal of God, is an objectification of the higher self. This is an objectification of the Atman. Now, if that sounds too clinical, remember that all this is indeed Brahman. And again, and this is why Swami Lokeshwananda and I were both right. You know, it's like that search, two mints in one. It depends on our state of mind. Depending on our state of mind, if we see oneness everywhere, then of course you'll be praying to the Atman. However, if you're aware of duality, then you pray to your chosen ideal. Then you pray to the Ishta, and that's where prayer comes in. If you have a sense of duality, then prayer is really very helpful. If you don't have a sense, if you're already immersed in Brahman, you don't have to worry about praying. You're fine. But if you're in a lower stage, it's really very helpful. So then what is the point of prayer? The point of prayer is to really purify our hearts, purify our minds, and to really direct our attention towards the Ishta. Sri Ramakrishna again and again said, pray to the Lord with a yearning heart, and you will surely find him. The disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, often, when you're going through that book of Edith Tipples, you see how often they speak about how much Sri Ramakrishna talked to them about prayer. There's this Swami Akundananda, for example, wrote, he said, the master would teach us how to pray. Sitting on his cot with his legs stretched out like a child, he would cry, oh, mother, come to me. Do come. I cannot bear the separation. How can you be at peace away from your little son? How can you, forgetful of me, be busy with other things? Come, oh, mother, come and take me in your arms. And Swami Akundananda writes, he said, that when at times like this he himself would become like an utterly forlorn child. He himself would be so taken up that he himself would feel like a forlorn child who had been abandoned by its mother. And he said he would start to cry like a child, like the kids in the grocery store. Ah! And he would be doing that because he himself would be so taken in by the emotion of it that he himself would weep and cry like a child whose mother had been taken away from him. Now, of course, when Sri Ramakrishna does it, it's completely heartfelt. It's completely sincere. And because Sri Ramakrishna was incapable of having any sort of duality between this and this, there was absolutely his heart and his lips were one. Now, we have to be careful that when we pray, that we do the same thing, because there's no point in us doing like this rote blah, 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 blah prayer. It doesn't do any good. It has to be completely, and there's no good in crocodile tears. We can't decide, you know, I probably have a little time between 4 and 4:15 where I could, you know, sort of schedule in a little praying and crying for God. It has to be completely from the heart, or it doesn't do any good at all, because God reads our hearts. He doesn't care for the blah, blah, blah. It has to be, forget the words. It has to be in the heart. So why did, if meditation is so much a part of the Hindu tradition, then why did Thakur and Mother and the direct disciples talk about it so much? And, well, I think it's because, And why do we talk more about meditation? Well, I think one problem is that we tend to put, and Americans certainly, tend to put all their eggs in the meditation basket. It's like people often come to Vedanta societies because they want to learn to meditate. Often people come, they say, they make an appointment with the Swami because they say, I want to learn to meditate. And that's a valid thing because they're completely stressed out. They don't know how to relax. They don't know how to let sort of civilization slough off their backs. They want to sort of like just let down and to find something more in their lives. And that's valid. It's valid. That's one of the many gifts that the Hindu tradition has given the world is our meditation and yoga techniques. And so in our instructions from our spiritual teachers as well, too, we're taught to meditate, we're taught to do japa, and japa is a very important form of prayer. But there's also the practice of prayer itself, which is a very important part of the Hindu tradition. In Sanskrit, the word is called prarthana. Prarthana, and it's a combination of pra plus artha, and it's to want something in a very, very intense way. And again, it's what Sri Ramakrishna would call yearning, that yearning for God. Now, the Hindu tradition itself has a very long history of prayers, and in fact, the world's earliest scriptures are Hindu prayers. The Rig Veda, all these are prayers of praise. Prayers of exaltation. For example, that wonderful peace chant, Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat. Filled with Brahman are the things we see. Filled with Brahman are the things we see not. From Brahman flows all that is, yet is Brahman still the same. This is a wonderful prayer of exaltation from one of those seers of truth, the rishis, who coming down from this profound meditation saw Brahman in everything, and this spontaneous outburst of praise, seeing Brahman in everything. So this is a prayer. This prayer of exaltation, again, the Svetasvatara Upanishad, this wonderful sense of exaltation, where this rishi comes back from this exalted state and sees everywhere the presence of Brahman in every being. He says, you are the fire, you are the sun, you are the air, you are the moon, you are the starry firmament, you are the Brahman supreme, you are the water, you are the creator of all, you are the woman, you are the man, you are the boy, you are the girl, you are the old man tottering on a stick. Your face is everywhere. You are without beginning. You are beyond time. You are beyond space. You are he who sprang the three worlds. Now, this amazing sense of exaltation, I mean, it's just, these are prayers. And if we just read them, and meditate on these exaltations, our own mind becomes elevated. That is a spiritual practice in itself, to go to these Upanishadic meditations and just have our mind lifted, to try to get into that space of really seeing Brahman everywhere as they did, to try to capture that mood. Now, most prayers of the Hindus and everybody else, for that matter, are not prayers of exaltation because we haven't gotten to that stage, but of supplication. Asking for divine help. And that's where most of us come from. Now, many of these early Vedic prayers are these prayers of supplication, the one that we started out with. Asato ma sadgamaya, lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. These are prayers of earnest supplication. Illumine my understanding. The most famous one is the Gayatri Mantra. That is a prayer of supplication. Burbhavasva tat savitur varenyam pargo devashadimahi di yo yo na prachodayat om. That's a prayer for the awakening of our higher intuition, of the awakening of di. May we meditate upon the effulgence of that supreme reality who pervades the earth, the heavens, the skies. May that supreme reality guide our understanding, guide our higher mind, guide our intuition towards the realization of Brahman. This is an important supplication. We can read in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna that he talks about one devotee who is doing Purushcharana of the Gayatri Mantra. This is like doing the Gayatri Mantra like 100,000 times every day, and Sri Ramakrishna is saying, he's doing something wrong. because if he was doing it right, he would be illumined by now. It's such a powerful mantra, such a powerful prayer, that to really do it sincerely would lead to a very high state of spiritual illumination. Now, and the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And the more you start thinking, the more I was reading it with the reading prayer in mind, and you see how much time and how much energy he spends on talking about prayer. So he's telling people to pray. His own prayers, for example, he says, Lord, give me pure love for thee. Now, Sri Ramakrishna already had pure love, but he's doing it to teach others. He said, Mother, please protect me. Please make me pure. Well, Sri Ramakrishna was pure. He's doing it to teach others. Again, Mother, please give me pure love for thy lotus feet. He is praying these earnestly to teach us. He's praying it knowing that M is there, that M is writing this down, is going to write it down in his little notebook, and that 150 years later, we're going to be going back and reading this and saying, oh, Sri Ramakrishna is telling us to pray like this. This doesn't mean that we wrote and memorize it by rote and say, okay, he said this, so, oh, Mother, give us pure love for thee. That doesn't do any good. But it gives us an idea of what to pray for, that we don't pray for, as he said, eggplants and cabbages. We pray for that which makes a difference, which can give us fulfillment. Because, I mean, you know, if we want, we can pray for we can pray to get the boyfriend. We can pray to lose 20 pounds. We can pray for the better job that we know that will make us happy, that won't make us happy, that we get deluded into wanting. We can have that, but it won't bring us peace. So Sri Ramakrishna shows it with this, what to pray for, how to get out of the eggplant mentality, to pray for that which can give us peace. So Sri Ramakrishna are praying, they're advising others to pray, so the question is why? Because, again, people who try to meditate often find that they can't or that it's very difficult to do. Now, when we say meditate, what are we actually talking about? When we go to the Yoga Sutras, which is kind of the textbook for talking about meditation, they define meditation as citta vritti nirodha, or the cessation of the vrittis. Now, if that sounds more boring than words, let's go back to what that means. They're talking about the cessation, stopping the vrittis. Now, what are vrittis? All of us, when we're thinking, think that we have a jumble of thoughts. Okay, I'm looking out my eye and I can see like the ohm over there, and I'm listening to the sounds on the road. You can see things back there. I can see things going on in here. I'm thinking, God, they're really getting bored. And you're aware of all these things going on in your mind. And we think they're different thoughts, but actually we can only think one thought at a time. So we have one microsecond thought, another microsecond thought, another microsecond thought, and these are all vrittis, or what they call mind waves, raising up, going down, raising up, instantaneous, like that. Now, meditation is to stop those and have our minds concentrate on one continual thought. Meditation is one continual thought towards the ishta, or towards our spiritual, whatever we're meditating upon. So it's compared to pouring oil from one vessel to another. So we don't have this popping off thing. We have this one smooth, one uninterrupted thought going towards the ishta. Now, you know, that wouldn't be hard if it wasn't for the fact that we had to deal with our own minds. You know, if I could deal with your mind, it'd be fine. But dealing with this monster in here, that's the entire problem, because as both the Buddhist and the Hindu tradition tells us, the mind is like the drunken monkey stung by a scorpion that's landed on a hot stove. Or, did I also mention he was coming off of meth? You know, he's like, ah! So we've got this right here, and somehow in order for us to get through, we have to deal with this monster. How do you deal with this guy? Because we can't meditate unless we deal with a meth addict in here. So the best way to deal with that is prayer. Prayer is what really helps us train this guy down and to get where the mind can be our friend and not our enemy. Prayer allows us to concentrate. It directs our mind and purifies our mind. So true meditation is, in fact, a very And people don't tend to understand this. They think meditation is relaxation. It's not. Meditation, real meditation, is a very advanced stage of concentration. It's a very advanced spiritual technique. Now, because most people can't do that because they haven't really worked on how to concentrate or even how to train the mind, they try to do something that's really beyond their ability. So they either spin their wheels getting frustrated trying to meditate, you know, just going like the car stuck in sand, or you end up going into cat space, you know, which is fine. But it's what Swami Prabhavananda called babying the mind. It's relaxing. It's kind of going to a little dull space. Well, it might be relaxing, but it is not. It does not add up to spiritual growth. It doesn't help our spiritual development. It doesn't purify our minds. It's just babying the mind. So, because the reason we do that is because we're trying to do a spiritual technique we're not quite capable of doing yet, because we haven't advanced to that stage of concentration. Now, this is not to say that we don't have to follow our guru's instructions. Believe me, I'm not saying that. There's no hope in spiritual life unless we absolutely follow our guru's instructions to the letter as much as humanly possible. Because without following the advice of our guru, who has given us that connection to the divine, we can't attain our spiritual goal. Period. What I'm saying is that prayer is a very helpful spiritual technique to do in addition to our meditation, and it makes meditation so much easier to do. It's just kind of, it's like when you're riding a bike and you need the trainer wheels. It's the trainer wheels. It helps a lot. And pretty soon the trainer wheels go off and you don't even know it. Another common mistake about prayer is that people don't want to do prayer because they say, well, it's a beginner's technique. Yes, prayer is for beginners. It's for spiritual babies. They want to jump in and try to meditate. Well, yeah, it is a beginning stage. So, you got a problem with the beginning stage? Does anyone have an issue with? I don't have an issue with being a spiritual beginner. Most people are spiritual beginners. That sort of meditation is a very advanced stage. So we need to start from where we are. Prayer is a really good place of getting a step up so we can actually learn how to concentrate so that we can meditate. And the other thing is that it's very difficult to concentrate on something that we don't have an idea about in the first place. We can't concentrate deeply on something we don't understand. It's like when you read those manuals on how to set your clock alarm, it's like, they're using language I don't understand. I don't get it. And they call the 800 number and they don't speak English. It's very frustrating. It's Chinese, I don't do Chinese. So we need to start actually from where we are. Swami Bhajananda, probably 20 years ago, wrote this great editorial in Prabhuddha Bharata on prayer. And he had this wonderful sentence. He said, unreal things cannot change our life. And it's so obvious, but it's like somehow it didn't strike me until I read it. Unreal things cannot change our life. So a simple prayer, which anybody can do a simple prayer, can really help us more than trying to do something we're not really capable of doing yet. Or at least try it to start with a simple prayer and then see how much easier it is to meditate after that. That's why Swami Brahmananda said, God runs to those who pray with a sincere heart. That means he's talking about yearning. And Sri Ramakrishna again and again in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna talks about byakul. We have to have yearning for God, that heartfelt yearning, that longing for God. But prayer is effective only if we have faith. Not only faith that God exists, but that there's God there who's waiting for us, who's listening to us, who is there waiting for anything that we might say. That we have to have that faith that not only that does this being exist, but this being cares that we're talking to her or him. We have to have that much faith. Now, it doesn't mean that our prayers are always answered. That's a wrong understanding. We don't think, okay, if I get the technique right, then I'll get the job. It isn't about that. Prayer means knowing, because we don't really know what's good for us. I mean, when I was 15, I had prayers like, thank God they weren't answered. Right? Can we all go there? So we don't know what's best for us. We don't know what's best for the world either. But it means real prayer and real faith means having that sense of knowing that we're being held like a baby is held against the breast of the mother. We're being held and we're being supported and taken care of, that no matter where we are, that no matter what is happening, crashing around us, that the Divine Mother, Sri Ramakrishna, that the Lord, however we want to see this form of God, that we're being held, that we're being protected, and we're being so loved. We're being so loved. And that is guiding us that we can pray and open our hearts to this divine reality who is so wanting to hear our prayers and to connect with us. So apart from faith, the other thing is to have that absolute sincerity, that absolute truthfulness of the heart, that we don't say, Lord, give me love for you, if you're not really interested in it. Then say, Lord, please let me want to have love for you. You know, I don't really want, you know, I don't really feel like it, but, you know, if I wouldn't mind having the experience. Lord, would you make me at least want to have yearning for you? Lord, would you try to at least make me interested in you? At least not make my meditation so hard that I would do anything in the world to avoid it? We can have, the thing is to be honest with ourselves, and then open our hearts from there. So we see a Holy Mother again and again saying, open your hearts, open your hearts. If you can't meditate, she just say, look at the picture of Sri Ramakrishna and open your hearts to him. It isn't very complicated. Just open your heart. Spontaneity, again, is so important. That's no hold bars, no fear, no retribution, just saying what a child, what a little, kids don't have any sense of saying what's right or wrong. You know, they don't have their social things instilled yet. Just the way a child would talk to the mother. It's like, Mommy, go to the bathroom now! That sort of openness. Sri Ramakrishna said, and we can see ourselves in this, that the mother will give a child a toy. When the mother's busy, she'll just hand the child a toy. It's like, okay, play with the little video game now, bye. She'll go off and do her own work. When the child ditches the toy and starts screaming for the mother, Sri Ramakrishna said, the mother will come running to the child. When we throw down the toys, when we are no longer interested in the toys, God will come. There's no question about that. But first we have to get sick of the toys and decide that, yeah, you know, I want something more than the toys. That's our part in the game. Sri Ramakrishna said, the breeze of grace is always blowing. We just have to set the sails. What is setting the sails? It means having that sense of wanting more in life. That we want more than what's offered on the channels. That we want something more authentic in our lives, something more that will give us peace. That, and setting the sails, is really starting some sort of an honest prayer. Let me have something more. Let me want to want you. Holy Mother said, open your grief-stricken heart to the Lord. Weep and sincerely pray, O Lord, draw me toward you. Give me peace of mind. By doing so constantly, you will gradually attain peace in mind. Well, is there any value in having peace of mind? Well, we can't, unless we have peace of mind, we can't have purity of heart. We can't have purity of mind. And without purity of heart and mind, we don't have a chance on earth of meditating. And if we can't meditate, there's no hope in peace. We can't have peace. And if there's that Bhagavad Gita brings that up again and again. And if we can't have peace, where is happiness? We can't. So our happiness really depends on us dealing with this monster here, dealing with this dude here, so that we can really try to have peace and real satisfaction and authenticity in our lives. So what we've discussed up to this point is prayers for ourselves, for our own spiritual growth. But another very important thing is praying for others. That's a very important tool in our spiritual life. Some of the most ancient Hindu prayers is about praying for those, praying for the well-being of others. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free from disease. May we all realize the truth. All this, there's often things of doing japa for other people, but praying for the well-being of others is a very important spiritual technique, not only for them, but for us as well. Now, I'm going to tell a story on myself, which I should have more wisdom not to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. Thank God it's not San Francisco. I wouldn't have nerve to do it in San Francisco. Okay, so I got involved in Vedanta when I was 15. And by the time I was 16, I had a boyfriend. So it's like, oh, I guess I can't be a nun because obviously, you know, if I like boys, I'm not fit to be a nun, that sort of thing, right? So by the time I was 17, my boyfriend had ditched me and had started going with, I was crushed. And he started going off with another girl. And we were going to go to Europe together and stay with his aunt and blah, blah, blah. And it was like my whole life was crashing around me. So I went to my guru, Swami Prabhavananda, and I said, Swami, I'm very bitter. And he said, because he had met my boyfriend and the whole thing. He gave his approval. So he said, oh, no, you cannot be bitter. And I was like, I'm bitter. And he said, no, 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 you must pray for him. I said, I'm not going to pray for him. He said, no, you must pray for him and you must pray for her as well. I said, I'm not praying for her. Oh, no. Because truth be told, I was the wronged woman, and you know, there's kind of it's like I'd lost everything else. So at least you can enjoy the righteous indignation of being the wronged woman. It's like, don't take that away from me. You know, there's kind of a you don't realize how much you can really enjoy, you know, being right, you know, when that happens. So he said, no, you must pray for him and you must pray for her. He said, you are to envision that Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother are putting their hands on their heads and blessing them. I'm not going to do that. And he said, no, you must. You must pray for them. And I was so angry. It's like I thought I could get a little consultation. And he was, oh, the poor thing. So I saw him on a Friday afternoon. And by Monday, I realized that my anger was lifting and my bitterness was pretty much gone. And to tell you the truth, I missed it. I was like, I could almost feel like, damn, you know, that was mine. I deserve that. It was this terrible thing about realizing how much you really felt that was yours and you could have it. But it took it away from me. And it was such a wonderful lesson to me. And I've used that in many times, that it's a wonderful technique because not only does it help the person you're praying for genuinely, but it also helps you. It removes your smallness of mind because there's a way in which we really kind of like our smallness of mind. It's so comfortable. We're very fond of our little minds. Because they're so familiar, we don't, you know, expansion often hurts. You know, if you're breaking through bonds and doing that, it hurts. Sometimes things break. We don't like them to break, so that's a very helpful thing. The other thing is doing japa for other people. Japa is a very important spiritual technique because the mantra itself is not, unlike petitional prayers, which is what we've talked about before. Japa is not a man-made composition. These are the name, they are the names of God. They are absolutely one with the God to whom we are praying. In our Hindu background, we understand that the namer and the named are one, that God and his name are one, that the power of God is in that name, and that's why doing japa is such an important spiritual technique. Because we should try to do it not only during our times of meditation, but also during other times. Because if you examine your mind a lot, you'll find we got a lot of junk going through our minds with these vrittis that we were talking about before, that if we don't have the name of God going through our mind, we're going to have like old commercials. We're going to have, you know, songs from the 60s. We're going to have, you know, old arguments that we think of I should have said that, or the perfect response an hour later. never quick enough. Where we left the keys. It's like we have this dreck going through our minds that unless we train our minds to purify with the name of God, we're gonna sully it with, like, you know, like when you go through a street that isn't clean, they have these old candy wrappers and stuff in it. It's like pieces of plastic. We're gonna do that with our own minds unless we have the street sweeping of the mantra, you know, to keep that going through our minds and kind of fill our minds full of God so that we keep our minds going with God at other times. The other thing is to do japa for the person. Another personal anecdote. When my father died, There's always a sense, even when you're prepared for the death, supposedly prepared for the death, there's always a sense, especially if you're a close to person, you wish you could have done more for that person. There's a sense when you're grief-stricken, it's like you wanted, it was time for them to go, you're glad they're gone, you know they're in a better place, but still, you wish you would like to do more. And Swami Adishwaranda said, set aside time every day and do japa for that person. Set aside, finish your own meditation, finish your own allotted japa that your guru told you to do, and do japa for that person. It will be good for you, and it'll be good for that person. So you take a vow of however amount of time that you want it, and then do it for that person. And it's a wonderful spiritual technique, because it definitely, you can feel when I'm on Vedanta. I'm info at Vedanta.org. So if you ever ask a question, want to know more about Vedanta, it goes right into my computer. So you get these random. I got this email from a woman in Brazil. Her son had committed suicide. What could she do? It's like, how do you ever talk to a mother whose child committed suicide? You know, you can't say, oh, there's nothing. There's very little consolation you can do except, please, you know, of course your prayers make a difference. Of course your japa makes a difference. Of course we can always pray. Our prayers do make a difference. And doing japa for someone really can make a difference in someone's life, even after they're gone. The death of the body is just this small thing. So we can definitely do something for someone else on that level. So, getting towards the end of our time, we can just say that prayer is a very helpful spiritual technique. It's important is that it gives us a relationship with our Ishta. It not only purifies our heart, it purifies our mind, but it actually puts us in a relationship with our chosen ideal of God. It gives us a sense of who we're praying to, who are we meditating upon. When we have a prayer life, we have a sense of that being with whom we're spending so much of our time sitting with. Who are we sitting with? Well, this person, this being that I'm praying to, it gives us a fulfillment of that relationship. It deepens our relationship, and it gives us a deepening relationship with that chosen ideal upon whom we meditate. It purifies our heart. It expands our heart. It purifies our mind. And that's why Swami Shivananda said, pray to him with all your heart for his grace and for devotion and for faith. It is not possible for everyone to practice hard austerities, but then through prayer, everything is attained. If you find it difficult to meditate, be prayerful. Thank you.